And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.
Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
Welcome to A View from the Stands, a podcast series in which we discuss the new normal in the world of sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the national sports editor of HT, Rudraneel Sengupta. Until this Sunday, Novak Djokovic hadn't lost the match in this calendar year. Yet, he only ever seemed to make the news for all the wrong reasons. Be it when he started an exhibition tennis tour in the heart of the pandemic and ended up being responsible for the second wave of the virus in Croatia, or when he decided to float the idea of a breakaway players' union that has since been met with the strongest opposition from all the other superstars and common folk alike on the circuit. Anyway, on Sunday, it took a special kind of Djokovic transgression to make one forget about all his other transgressions this year. Because on Sunday, Djokovic flicked the ball at a lineswoman in anger and was defaulted from the tournament. The first world number one to see such an acrimonious exit from a Grand Slam. Now, we can endlessly debate whether he meant to hit her or whether the speed of the shot was enough to cause damage and stuff like that. But the point is, he had not just been broken by Carreño Busta, he was obviously also very irritated because he was broken. And that means that his frustration had intent. So if you go by the book, that's enough to, you know, put him away from the slam as the organizers of the US Open did. It may be harsh, but he was also warned not to take his frustrations too far on court in the past. So, yeah, let's get right down to it and find out with what my co-host Rudra thinks about all of this drama.
Right. Aditya, you know, you said that we can endlessly debate on whether it was intentional. I want to say that it was unintentional, you know, and I think it was pretty clear that it was unintentional. I mean, by that I mean simply that he did not really want to hit anybody. Yeah. He was clearly, he was not even looking at the lineswoman. He was, his back was turned towards her. And he clearly thought that, you know, he's just going to hit the ball at the wall behind him. And, you know, and if he was at any other court, except for Arthur Ashe, that's what would have happened because none of the other courts have lines people right now. But saying that, I mean, this is a man, you know, who will, I think for certain, overtake Roger Federer's record of having won the most slams. And he spent so much time at the highest level of tennis that he should have known better. That's all. That's what it is. You know, that's what it comes down to. He should have known better. He's accustomed to playing, top level tennis, and he knows that, you know, there are all these rules in place and that this can happen. And the thing is, what, like, absolutely, you pointed out, that he's done it before. this is not the first time he's put a line umpire in danger. At the 2016 French Open, his racket slipped out of his hand as he swiped it in anger during a quarterfinal match. It narrowly missed the judge. That could have been a default. Same season, during the ATP finals, he smacked a ball into the stands and it didn't hit anyone. But then I remember, I mean, it's just out on Twitter. I was reliving that because that video is out there.
Exactly. It's made it very, very big.
Yeah, at the press conference, a reporter asked him that if this could be a pattern of behavior and that maybe it could, you know, put him in trouble. And he responded very angrily, and other journalists at the press conference laughed. And I don't know why they laughed. They shouldn't have. I mean, it was a legitimate question. Because Djokovic said that, you know, well, it could have hit somebody, but it could have also have snowed in the arena. But it didn't. You know, it's like, okay, that's not... It's not the kind of stuff you really expect from a player of his stature, but that's Djokovic for you. You know, he puts himself into these really troublesome situations quite frequently, doesn't he?
Yeah, famous last words, right? Because I think what he told that journalist in question at the O2 Arena was, if you think I keep doing this, then, you know, why haven't I been suspended so far? So
that's right. That's exactly
and
right.
Like, exactly. And like that journalist said, you may not have been suspended yet. That's what he actually led his question with. He said, yeah. But what if this comes to cost you big at a time when you don't want it to cost you big, right? Like, and that's exactly what happened because, as we all know, in this US Open, Nadal and Federer and Wawrinka, the other slam winners, had pulled out. Cilic wasn't in form. He's yet another slam winner. Del Potro is injured. And Andy Murray's had a hip replacement surgery. So right. It was basically a cakewalk for a man who basically did not need anything delivered to him on a platter. He would have won, you know, Grand Slam number 18 in recent
minutes.
Yeah.
He was cruising to it.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that he let a free slam elude him, it's going to cost him. And it's going to hurt him too. But I think the point is a slightly bigger one than that, right? It's Djokovic and his heel turn into the super villain this year. Like the fact that he cannot put a step right. And, you know, like this is Novak Djokovic. He's the greatest player on earth. He's possibly greater than Roger Federer, you know, in the time in which he's won all these tournaments. And like the fact that he's on his third win now in just, you know, in a space of like 6 years. And in each of these wins, like he ends up winning some 7-8 Grand Slams. He's, of course, going to overtake Nadal and Federer by the end of it. But why do people hate him so damn much, man? And he really doesn't help his cause.
Right. I mean, I think he's got a restlessness in him as well, right? I mean, because he's been doing so much through the year and everything is getting him into trouble. You know, what you pointed out before, he's floated an alternative players council. Then of course, the Adria tour, which, and all of these things, you know, the intentions seem to be good. I mean, the Adria tour, the intention was that he wanted to help people, tennis players in that area, in the Baltic area, in the Adriatic area.
Absolutely.
He wanted to help
they weren't making money
and that's like the place where everybody plays tennis, right? And that is like a huge professional tennis players pool in those countries, and he wanted to help them, but you know, that tour was done with absolutely no regard for the pandemic whatsoever. They were all partying, there was no social distancing being followed, and that set just the wrong tone, you know, and send the wrong message. And of course, everybody started testing positive, Djokovic himself included. So, you know, the intentions could be good. I mean, the Players' Council, again, it's the same intention. He keeps talking about how tennis, you know, the top-level players earn a whole lot of money. But middle-level, the people, you know, just outside the top 100, there's very, very little money to be made there. And you know, we've seen and heard and read stories about how players go from tournament to tournament. You know, that's that's how they live. And he wanted to change that, and he wanted to, you know, so to do that, he floated a new player council, but that didn't work out too well. In the middle of in a time when tennis is in all kinds of trouble, and you don't know whether the slams are happening or not, and it took so much effort to put the US Open on the ground and running, in the middle of that, he had the time to think of and start these processes. And maybe, I mean, I don't want to, this is a speculation alert here, because we should, you know, I don't want to get into that territory of trying to second guess what he was thinking. But I mean, was that too much pressure on him? Does that put too much pressure? And this fault a result of that kind of pressure that he's put on himself?
I highly doubt so, having watched Djokovic for so long and so keenly for the last 10 years, or maybe even a little more. Djokovic he just has this very uncanny way of switching off, because he's always had this pressure. I mean, whether, you know, even when he wasn't such a big guy to take calls on the player council level, he had the pressure of being the next big thing. And then, you know, when he had a rivalry going with Rafa and Roger simultaneously, there was enormous pressure from the media and his fans. And, you know, he was constantly asked about the fact that, you know, he's not liked as much as the other two. Why is it so? Now, this can get a bit tiring. But I must tell you that at the 2015 US Open final where Djokovic played Federer, I was lucky enough to be there. And I've never seen anything like this in my life where, you know, the Arthur Ashe Stadium can hold a capacity of, I think, 23 or 24,000 people. It was basically Djokovic and his box in which there was that actor from 300, Gerard Butler. So basically about five of them who were supporting Djokovic and 23,995 people supporting Federer.
And it's and a bit like the plot of 300.
Precisely. I was going to come to that. But yeah, it was exactly that. It was exactly what, you know, the guy in his box had been through in a movie. And this was Djokovic doing it in real life, right? But he's always known how to switch it off. And Wimbledon, anyone who's ever had the privilege to have been there knows that, you know, those guys cannot see beyond their noses and Roger Federer, right? But to be in a position where he was two match points down against Federer in the last Wimbledon that happened and then still successfully turn it around, can you imagine the kind of pressure he goes through? So and knows how to deal with it and knows how to switch it off. Right in the past, I don't think he would have carried the baggage of being, you know, an anti-vaxxer or being, you know, a guy who kind of made the pandemic a little worse than it already was, you know, in Croatia and a couple of other countries. I don't think that would have affected him on court at all, because I really think because the other issues that he's dealt with are more in line with tennis, which is already such a pressure-filled sport, he knows how to deal with life in general. So, you know, he knows how to brush off stuff that isn't important. And I'm sorry to say, when he's playing on court, coronavirus is not important. Otherwise, he will not play. Otherwise, he would have pulled out, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's just sad. It's sad, you know. And I agree with you. I don't think he intended to hit that line zoom on. Of course not. There have been cases like with Denis Shapovalov, who's still in this US Open, and he will play the quarterfinals tonight. Or by the time you listen to this, it may be over. We don't know yet. But, you know, he, in the Davis Cup, when he was representing Canada, he smacked the ball with some real pace, like some real, real pace at the chair umpire's eye. And the chair umpire's eye, I think, was permanently disfigured, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, the same thing happened. Shapovalov was instantly defaulted and all his earnings from the tournament was snatched away from him, blah, blah, blah. All of that that happened to Djokovic. But Shapovalov proved that he didn't really mean to hit that guy. He was just very frustrated. Yeah.
You could see that. You could see that. He hit the ball so hard. He expected the ball to go straight up into the sky and like, you know, float gently down. But instead, it went straight into the umpire's eye. I mean, of course, he didn't. He didn't
Roger's done this so many times when he's frustrated, right? Like, whacks the ball just over the stands so that, like, it falls harmlessly somewhere onto the pavement beyond. But, you know, none of these guys really expect or want to or intend to hit these people. And it could also be argued that Djokovic's shot was, you know, it had no power on it. Like, you know, unlike Henman's shot in 1995. Yeah. But I don't know. By the book, he had to be banned, and he was. But I wish that Lions Woman did a little more. I know this is the wrong thing to say. This is not the politically right thing to say. I wish he walked up to the chair umpire and the tournament director and said, you know, I wasn't hurt. Because that 10-year-old girl who was hit by Tim Henman in 1995 actually said, please don't ban him. Please don't ban him. And she was crying because of all the pressure on her. But she really didn't want to see Henman banned. And I don't think this lineswoman did either. But maybe she was just a little too rattled.
Yeah, I think she was quite rattled as well. I think it was just like, you know, one of those things. Because if you get hit in the Adam's apple, which is where she hit, right in the throat. If you get hit in the throat, it can really like knock you out badly, even if it's not like, even if the ball is not traveling with any force.
Absolutely.
For that time that, you know, your oxygen supply gets cut off from the windpipe and it can feel like really, really crazily weird and scary. So maybe that's what, you know, maybe she was just
panic,
trying to recover from that. Yeah, panic. Exactly. Panic, pain and all of that. And I think Djokovic was quite graceful at that moment. You know, you could see that he was shocked at what happened.
I think there was also fear, Rudra. Yeah. Because he knew exactly what that meant.
Yes, he did. He did. He did. He tried to sway the tournament officials. That didn't work out. But he knew what that meant. And of course, he's taken to social media and told the trolls to stop harassing the lady, which is also a good gesture.
Yeah.
Yeah. But tell me something. Do you think that this narrows the window for Djokovic to break Federer's record?
No, not at all. I've been saying this for a while now. I think Djokovic is going to run away with the slam title count. He already has the Masters. Anyway, no one really takes that into consideration when they want to compare one to the other for the greatest of all time in that title. But it's just purely based on how well he's done in the last 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, and how he's bounced back from all kinds of problems that were thrown at him, not just injuries. Some of them were mental. At least 5 more years. And, it's going to be well past Federer for sure. It depends
five
on how many
years?
Titles Nadal wins. Yeah, I think he's got five more years.
Five more years? He's 33.
Yeah, see, he's 33. Roger just turned 39. And he's very much in contention every time he plays a Grand Slam. I don't see why that shouldn't be true for Djokovic. And at the same time, I think whether he wins the all-time record, whether he manages to win enough slams to have that all-time record, is directly going to depend on how many more French Opens Nadal accumulates before he retires. And I think he's got a few more left in him. So, right. Yeah, this fight is far from concluded. Right. There are going to be many more slams between Rafa and Djokovic. And really, this is hardly a set.
I just think that the younger crowd is also catching up. So it's a...
All these people to be out of the picture for them to win, their first slam. We're assuming that the US Open, does go on till Sunday, and someone new is certainly going to win it, because all 8 faces that are left now and all 12 that were left after Djokovic was banned hadn't won a slam. So, that's the only silver lining out of all of this, right? Like, we're actually going to see a new slam winner after Cilic back in 2014. But Cilic, he made a few more slam finals and he kept losing to these guys after that. I think he made one Wimbledon and one Australian and lost both to Federer. And it just tells you a lot about this current era and why we should appreciate them, their greatness right now, right? I mean, it's right. Nice that we get to see something different, and it kind of shakes up the monotony a little bit. But that's about it. I think I would love for all of them to have 30 slams each and wait for the generation after this to pick it up from where these guys have left off, if they leave it at all.
Yeah. But let's end this on that silver lining you spoke about, that we are going to have a new Grand Slam champion in many, many years.
Yeah. Who would you want that new Slam champion to be, Rudra?
I think Dominic Thiem. Simply because he beat Sumit Nagal. So I want the man who beat Nagal to be the champion.
Be the champion. Yeah. But you know what? It's also somewhere in your subconscious, you're rooting for this guy because he kind of deserves it for having, reached 3 slam finals in the past, having lost to Nadal in 2 of them, Djokovic to 1. You root for the guy who you think is a worthy successor to these people. Thiem, most certainly. Daniel Medvedev, actually, the Russian hero. He had made the US Open final last year and he lost to Nadal in 5. Right. I hope he goes all the way this time. But he runs into Thiem in the semi-final if the 2 of them get there. So, that's going to be great. But the other side has Borna Coric, it has Zverev, it has Denis Shapovalov, who we just spoke about, has Andrei Rublev. So all these guys, they really are the future of tennis. But until this era can find newer ways to carry on into, the next decade, I'm very happy for the future to be on pause. Yeah, thanks for tuning in. This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on @HTSmartcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
Hey, This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.